I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. The cybersecurity prodigy and the cyber activist, the digital diplomat and the actor who got into Edward Snowden's head. We've met them all this week as part of our Safe Mode coverage. The common thread is that each story brings us a different perspective from the digital front lines, where security and technology meet. Today, we're hearing about that place where the latest technology meets real-life war. Earlier today on The World, we heard about the Army's new cyber warfare branch in Georgia. Now let's talk about warfare via drones. It used to be that pilots deployed to a military action overseas. They dropped bombs from planes, then came home after their tour of duty. These days, drone operators fire their missiles remotely, and they're home in time for dinner. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein visited the home of a drone operator with 10 years' experience, and yet she's just 30 years old.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Taylor greets me at her suburban home. She's pretty. She wears makeup and eyeliner, peach nail polish. She has dove tattoos on the inside of each wrist. Taylor doesn't want us to use her real name because some people aren't very happy about what she does for a living. She grew up on a little farm in Northern California, and after high school, she was looking for a way out of town.
I always wanted to be an FBI profiler, so I joined the Air Force into the intelligence portion.
It was 2003, around the start of the Iraq War. She was assigned to what was then a small Air Force program, just about 50 young men and women who learned to analyze images gathered by predator drones and act on them.
So yeah, I had no idea what I was getting into. There was no press about them, really. There was just what you heard word of mouth through the community.
A military drone has two operators. There's a pilot who flies the thing by remote control and a sensor operator who manipulates the cameras and the missiles. Taylor trained as a sensor operator for 6 months. And then just like that, she was running missions.
It was intense because you're these 19-year-old kids who've never had any experience in war or anything like that. And you're getting trained how to, you know, blow things up and be responsible for million-dollar equipment flying over countries that you've never even heard of. So I like to think I was pretty much scared out of my mind going through.
You were. I mean, did they, like, teach you or sort of inculcate in you that sense of responsibility and that sense of fear?
I think they overdid it. It was a little overwhelming, you know, worrying that you're going to mess something up, and, you know, messing something up could mean blowing up the wrong house.
Higher-ups were watching. They decided who to follow and when to pull the trigger. But still, the stress was immense.
You would have people saying, all right, the president is looking at what you're doing right now, so don't mess up.
Seriously.
They would tell you stuff like that.
So a typical workday, maybe Taylor snooping on insurgents in Nigeria or bombing terrorists in Afghanistan. And then her shift ends. She walks out of the control station and she's in Nevada, ready to go home or go grocery shopping. Or as Taylor says, turn the beer light on.
We would all kind of drink. Because you can't talk to anybody else. You know, everything you're doing is classified. And, you know, whether you did something that you were really proud of or you just did something that is leaving you walking around with the, you know, 1,000-yard stare, you can't talk to anyone except for the people that you just did everything with, like your crew. So you kind of bind together and you drink a lot. And yeah, that's pretty much how you deal with it.
I wanted to know, how does Taylor's perception of war and security compare with the older generation, the pilots who actually flew planes and dropped bombs from the sky? So Taylor and I Skyped one.
Kevin, can you hear us?
We're good. Yes, clear as you like. How about me?
Kevin Gambold was a Top Gun kind of pilot. He ran missions over Kosovo and Iraq multiple times for England and for the U.S. He eventually transitioned to drones, and now he owns a commercial drone consulting firm called Unmanned Experts. Gambold says in the old days, most of a fighter pilot's life was training.
The fighter guys only go to work, real work, when there's a war on. And they only go for a couple of months, and then they come back. Hopefully.
What's changed so dramatically, he says, is what's caused Taylor so much stress. Drone operators don't need to play war games because they're actually doing the real thing every day, It's perpetual war.
A massive, massive turnabout. That's a lot of pressure. You know, you put people effectively on the front line for 3 years working a shift system that is barking mad and go, yeah, they'll be fine. You know, they won't have an alcohol problem. I think it's pretty intense.
It's not like the military doesn't know this. Drone operators are tested for PTSD and other mental health issues. Taylor looks at the next generation, the 19-year-old recruits she's helped to train, and they worry her. She says they're so native to the world of first-person gaming, she fears they're more desensitized to the gravity of their work.
The way video games are so realistic now, you know, you're running around, shooting things, bombing things, and you don't feel anything because it's just a game.
There's been widespread opposition to the kind of work Taylor does. Protests that drones have killed innocent civilians from Pakistan to Yemen.
Now we have this label as like baby killers or something, you know, and it's not fair. I wish that people could understand the benefits of not having to send guys on the ground and putting themselves in harm's way.
Do you think that you've killed innocent people or that the unmanned vehicle has?
Oh, God. I want to say that I would trust in the people.
Taylor goes on for a bit in military ease about trusting the chain of command. And then finally she gets to her point.
You're told these are bad guys, you know, like really bad guys. These guys are planning on the next 9/11. So you want to think that you just saved thousands of people as opposed to I just killed 5 people. But I'll never know for sure.
Taylor takes me down into the basement. Toys and a racetrack are strewn about the carpet. In a corner, an American flag and military medals are laid out on a table. Taylor's proud of her service to America. She signed up as part of the 9/11 generation, the millennials who wanted to get the bad guys who blew up the Twin Towers. But when she had her son, who plays with these toys on the floor, things changed.
I think it really brought a sense of humanity to what I had done. Maybe all that hate kind of just melted away and you're left, like I said, you're left with this like feeling left over of, it's kind of a sadness, you know, like you're sad that these things have to happen.
Taylor left the Air Force in 2009 and trained other sensor operators after that. She recently took a leave of absence because of health issues, and she attributes some of those problems to a decade of living in a perpetual state of long-distance war. She's not sure what's next. Maybe school, maybe playing the field for government jobs. She chuckles and says, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up. For The World, I'm David Summerstein.